This is O'Reilly Week in Review for May 4th, 2009. I'm James Turner, contributing editor for O'Reilly Media, and this week we'll talk to our very own Tim O'Reilly, co-author of the new Twitter book, about some recent trends we've seen on Twitter. We'll also be speaking to Dale Doherty of Make Magazine about the growing interest in the maker culture in America. All that, plus our usual podcast quiz, here on O'Reilly Week in Review. Like pretty much everything else in the past few weeks, Twitter has gotten caught up in the whole swine flu epidemic panic. With that in mind, we thought we'd ask Tim O'Reilly, co-author of the new Twitter book, and of course our founder and CEO, to comment about what role Twitter has had in the whole swine flu story.
You made the comment that Twitter's getting a lot of play, but Twitter has so many uses. It's a little bit like saying, well, you know, the internet's getting a lot of play, or the telephone is getting a lot of play, or, you know, video is getting a lot of play. People are using this medium. And what's so interesting about Twitter is that it reflects all the many, many use cases, including, you know, spreading misinformation, instead, as well as, being the first alert of new information. All these are good functions, and I think some people reacted a little bit to the fact that, that Twitter seemed to increase the fear and hype level a little bit. But I don't know that I would blame that on Twitter. Twitter just meant that the news spread faster. So anyway, I guess when I think about Twitter, the thing I think about the most is how powerful it is at reflecting actual human communications. You know, I know people who are using it in hundreds of different ways. You know, there are people who are using it for that wonderful original use case that Atlesa defined so beautifully as ambient intimacy. I know people like me who are using it as a way of sharing my, you know, thought processes, you know, what I'm learning, what I'm reading, what I'm caring about. I'm using it as a publishing medium, really. And I've described my own work with Twitter, you know, as being the most minimal newspaper, you know, and I mean that very seriously. When I gave a talk at the New York Times recently and I spoke about Twitter, you know, I talked about the process of what a publisher does. A publisher pays attention to a community, whether it's a community of authors or a community of newsmakers, and they then curate it. They decide what's important. And then they share that with their community of readers. And then they presumably have feedback loops. And so I look at what I do with Twitter, and I say, well, I'm sharing the news that I'm finding interesting. I'm also providing, I have the ability to, in some sense, increase the status of members of my community. You know, I got this originally when I tweeted about the fact that I really liked the Venture Hack site. And Babak Nivi, who started the site, had a post actually on Friend Feed in which he posted a graph showing what happened to his, you know, Twitter follower count when I did that. And, you know, it doubled immediately. And I think that's a wonderful thing. You know, I was able to find somebody that a lot of people who were following me didn't know about. I was able to call him out and say, hey, here's this great, you know, post on Venture Hacks. You know, I find this a great site. And I did just what I do when I publish a book, or just what I do when I pick somebody to be a speaker at a conference. You know, I'm basically saying this person is worth paying attention to. And for me, that's just a very, very powerful use case that has made me so fond of Twitter. But then, of course, I go out there and I see all these other ways that people are using it. And it's just exciting.
One of the things I've noticed is that while what used to be traditionally considered to be blogs have stopped being really weblogs and are more personal editorials now, or sometimes personal rants, Twitter has really turned into, for a lot of people, I think, the new blogging medium, because with the short length and with using the tiny URLs, a lot of what I see is just a line about something interesting someone saw and a link.
Yeah, it's funny. If you look back at the very early weblogs, Dave Weiner's, Userland blogs, it really was, in some sense, a tweet stream. You know, Dave literally, in the course of the day, was doing tweet-length paragraphs saying, this was interesting, this was interesting, this was interesting. And then occasionally he would write a longer essay. And I think what we've seen is the bifurcation of that function of blogs, which was, hey, I saw this, I want to share it. And the, hey, I want to have a longer conversation or opinion about this into different tools. Now, I think they maybe need to be reunited in some future world, because I know I certainly find certain pieces that I wish that I had a few more than 140 characters to comment. I find myself sometimes being pulled into conversations, in which case I go, boy, I really should be doing this on Friend Feed. There's the Tumblr length blog posts. And by the way, I think that's actually something that I don't think that many people have noticed. I mean, people are aware of Tumblr, but what they're not aware of is how the Tumblr style blog post has actually become part of many other sites. So, for example, if you look at Huffington Post, many of their little squibs, their little widget-sized article leads that they have on the homepage are to Huffington Post articles, but many of them are to articles on other sites. So effectively, they've embedded a Tumblr-like blog, slightly more expanded than Twitter, within the context of a remaking of the blog into a newspaper. And of course, the Wall Street Journal has always had a column of Tumblr, almost Twitter size entries, which were usually pointers to more extensive articles elsewhere.
Just to come back to news to finish things off, Gary Trudeau has fairly noticeably been parodying the process of news generation or news reporting by professional journalists on Twitter. What do you think the role might be for Twitter in news gathering and news reporting in general? I know that, for example, the swine flu, quote-unquote, pandemic that's going on, we had a case in New Hampshire, and essentially all I was doing was repeating, wow, we just had a case in New Hampshire. So I don't know that I was adding any value to the conversation beyond kind of this echo chamber that's being referred to. Is there a place for news?
Absolutely. First off, I wouldn't say that you're adding no value, because one of the values that occurs when somebody says, oh my gosh, we had a case in New Hampshire, is that they're spreading the word. You know, the fact is, the retweeting or commenting like that is a little bit the equivalent of the newsboy on the street corner. Here, breaking news. we don't have that anymore. So this is, we're just kind of passing on the word. And you might say, well, that's a less important function than breaking original news. Absolutely. And yes, it sometimes can become drivel. But I also think we'll get better tools for separating the wheat from the chaff. And people will learn, I'm not adding value anymore. And I certainly think that retweeting has gotten somewhat out of hand. And that's one of the reasons why in the Twitter book I wrote a section about why Via is better than, RT. Because it was really around this idea that it's very easy and lazy to just say RT, at some user and pass on whatever they said. And it's much better to say, give your take on it and then, give them credit with a Via. And since I've really started trying to do that more, I find myself, not making sure that I pass on something of my own, connection to the story, or in some cases, not passing it on at all.
last week's podcast quiz asked you to find the earliest reference to Sun Microsystems in the new Google News timeline. We got quite a few answers. Unfortunately, no one was even within 3 years of the correct answer. The first reference I was able to find using the timeline was in a German edition of Computer World published on July 29th, 1983. Since no one got the correct answer, no one will be getting a copy of an O'Reilly book for it, but we've got a new and probably a little easier question coming up later in the podcast that may give you a chance to get the O'Reilly book of your dreams. We also had a chance this week to talk to the editor and publisher of Make Magazine, Dale Doherty, about the resurgence of the maker culture in America. He started by talking about some recent high-profile mentions of the culture.
I believe that being a maker of something means you're a producer, that you're you know, it incorporates a number of different things. It takes knowledge and skill to make things. It doesn't take the same level of knowledge and skill to buy things. But more importantly, I think it's part of our creative genius as a country is to figure out interesting problems to solve, interesting things to make. And I think in the context of President Obama's message is there's some big things that we as a country have to deal with, and we've got to solve these problems ourselves. We're not just going to get be able to say buy an answer off the shelf.
Make, for better or worse, kind of has a reputation for the projects being kind of quirky, on the edge, science fair type stuff a lot of the time. Do you think that there's going to be, especially as people start to address the more serious problems that we're looking at now, for more of a practical bent to things, or do you think there's always going to be a need for just the somewhat frivolous hacks, as it were?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's two answers to that. One is our next issue is called Remake America. It's the theme of Make. It's also the theme of Maker Fair this year. And, you know, we're trying to certainly engage around these issues. I mean, we have, I think, been successful organizing makers into something like a movement because it's fun, quirky, interesting. The end of the day, what we're doing in the magazine, we're not trying to get you to build those projects. We're getting you to understand how to build those projects so that you can build something of your own. Ideally, you know, every maker has their own idea of what to do, and that may align with social goals, or it may just be, you know, this is my hobby and these are things I like to play with. Both are kind of legitimate ways of looking at this.
Over the last couple of years, there's really been a renaissance of the whole do-it-yourself phenomenon. Obviously, Make is a part of that. Sites like Instructables are part of that. A lot of the content you see on like Discovery Network seems to be calling to that. Why do you think this is the time that that's struck such a chord?
Well, I felt when we started this that it was actually, what I was seeing in the Make stuff was people were beginning to hack the physical world, that physical things like anything from a TiVo to your lighting at home to your car became things that you looked at and say, if I can do that on a computer, I wonder what's controlling that on the car. I'm going to get in there and figure that out. I think there's always been a tradition of DIY, of making things, of hacking things. It does seem to wax and wane. I think right now there are some practical reasons that people say, it's a good thing to be resourceful. It's a good thing to reuse things, to either take them apart and use their components, or to extend the life of that of an object by repairing it. People are feeling reasonably bad about just throwing things away and putting things in landfill. So being resourceful is definitely part of I think a new mindset today, driven by the environment as well as the economy. However, I think there's also something going on the internet that has to do with self-expression. That, you know, one of the reasons you make something is to share it with other people, and you get to be known as that crazy person who makes something. And, you know, the tools of the internet are just fabulous for putting up a video or putting up photographs or you know, blogging. Here's what I did today. You know, it's a very natural kind of thing to do. And, again, people did it in the past, but sometimes they did it in their own garage and had limited numbers of people to share it with. Today, you can share it worldwide.
One final question for you. A lot of the projects that you see are fairly innocuous, but occasionally you do run into ones that either involve high voltages or high pressures or other things that could potentially be a hazard to you or others. And obviously there's a little bit of a don't do this at home unless you really know what you're doing factor. Where do you set the limit there?
Well, I don't know that we have. I think you have to... I think part of maker culture is to be responsible for yourself and understand what you're trying to get into. Obviously, kids are a little bit of a different thing, but I was just actually blogging something today about a book that's come out called Free Range Kids and sort of how to give your children the freedom you had without cause for great worry, something like that. And I mean, to be able to explore and try things out for yourself is part of growing up, and it's actually part of staying young as you grow up. So I'm not terribly worried about that. I mean, we put the disclaimers in and that kind of stuff, but I think the greater problem is for people not trying things, or people being afraid of things, people being fearful that technology is going to cause them great harm. I think most of the time one can educate oneself and figure out what the issues are and work your way through that.
I actually saw a Gilbert Scientific radioactivity kit from the 50s that was on the net the other day, and that scared me a little, because, like, you know, now take the radium. You know, they certainly we seem to have managed to survive quite a bit when we were kids.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, Bill Gerstel, the author of Backyard Ballistics, gives a really good talk, and you know, I'm not saying it's recommended for every kid, but you know, the Thomas Edison blew up a train car, you know, as a teenager. He was working in the mail room and doing experiments, or the mail car. You know, there's quite a number of people that actually did some kind of damage like that on their way to a rather productive or illustrious career in science or technology.
What interesting is coming up in the make world that people should be keeping an eye out for?
Well, our big thing is Maker Faire, which is May 30th and 31st at San Mateo Expo Center. It's just outside, near the airport in San Francisco. And, you know, we're right now just trying to jam all the makers into the fairgrounds, figure out where they go. We had over 60,000 people last year, and we expect at least that crowd, if not more. I think it's going to be another great event. It's going to be different this year, as it is every year. We get new makers. I never quite know what to expect. But, you know, the basic idea of the fair is it's a chance to talk to people who know an awful lot about, you know, their projects and what they do. But all of them are enthusiasts. And it's just so infectious to be there and talk to people who are crazy to do something. And, I've seen it work with kids and adults and grandparents. They come to fair, and there's so much to see and do. It is exhausting, but it's also exhilarating.
Well, if you ever get one on the East Coast, I'd love to go.
Yeah, I'm working on it. Maybe 2010.
Since we've been talking about Twitter this week on the Week in Review, and also, later in the week on the O'Reilly Radar site, you're going to see an interview with John Adams, who's an operations engineer at Twitter, we thought would ask you a Twitter question. This one should be fairly easy. Just find the Twitter handle of five different O'Reilly authors. Once you have them, send them to PodQuiz, PodQuiz, at O'Reilly.com. If you're the first person to get us 5 different O'Reilly authors' Twitter handles, you'll get your choice of any book in the O'Reilly catalog. If you live outside the United States, we'll send you a PDF. Good luck. Well, that's the end of this supersized edition of O'Reilly Week in Review. Join us next week for more news and analysis, as well as more peeks at the upcoming Velocity Conference. The theme music for O'Reilly Week in Review was composed and performed by Father Rock. For O'Reilly Media, I'm James Turner.